The following content is provided under a Creative Commons license. Your support will help MIT OpenCourseWare continue to offer high-quality educational resources for free. To make a donation or view additional materials from hundreds of MIT courses, visit MIT OpenCourseWare at ocw.mit.edu.
All right, so before we go into the stuff that I'm going to cover from the readings today, I want to get a sense of who's already found a team. How many of you are already in the team? Well, half the class, okay. And the rest of you, what we're going to do is try to solve that problem right now and get you in the team. For the people who are in teams, can you say what mechanic they're working with and how many people you have in your team?
What if we have two mechanics that we're not sure about yet?
That's fine. Just talk about both of them, and then you'll figure it out probably today.
Okay.
So, what are they?
We were thinking between either like pathfinding or some kind of resource management.
Okay. So pathfinding.
Sorry, not path building.
Path building and resource management.
And we have three people.
Right now. Okay. What else?
Hidden information, and we're at
4 pages. You have 4? Okay. Hidden information, so that's 4.
Yep. Stealing or like a team sharing?
Stealing or?
Or like a teammate sharing?
Teammate
sharing. Sharing with your teammate.
Oh, okay. So stealing or team sharing. I'm just going to say team sharing. How many people?
Four.
Is that it? Okay, and how many people are looking for teams? Okay, 1, 2, 3. Is your hand up? No, okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people. All right, so we could make 2 complete teams out of the remaining 6. That's, I think that's right. Did I count that right? Yeah, okay. That's what I'm gonna suggest is that of all the people who don't have teams, we try to make 2 teams out of that, rather than try to join this team. Because otherwise you end up with a 2-person team somewhere, and that's not so good. All right, so of the people who aren't on a team, we went through brainstorming on Monday. There's a whole, I can bring up the list again, but was there something that you remember from Monday that you felt like you would like to work on?
Either voting, or bankruptcy, or decline, basically trying to bankruptcy.
Okay, bankruptcy.
And your numbers, the numbers are right, there's 16 people, but you said that there's 4, 4, 3, and 6 unsigned.
There are 6 unsigned, right?
But there you counted a total of 4, 4, 3, so someone's being counted on 2 teams, so being counted as a team.
Or maybe someone's not here right now.
There may be people who are not here, and we have a bunch of 3-person teams, it's a lot easier for extra people to sort of jump in one. And 3-person teams are pretty easy to work with. 4-person teams are also easy to work with, but it's not easy to schedule a meeting with 3 people. So 3-person teams are good. 2 is pushing it, because if someone gets sick,
back to mechanics. I was interested in trading. Or maybe building or expansion?
Trading, building. Did you say expansion?
Expansion, or territory rather.
Okay, so by expansion we mean territorial expansion. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, I mean we see these 3 things in one game a lot, right? But for this assignment, let's see whether we can like deal with one.
I'm interested in deck building or area control. So
here are the different kinds of game mechanics that the people who are unassigned are currently, you know, at least one person is interested in them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through each one of them, and for the people who aren't assigned, put up your hand if you think that you might be willing to work on a team on that concept. Okay? So starting with voting. We have three. Bankruptcy. One. Trading. Three. Building. Four. Expansion. That's territorial expansion again. Four. Deck building. One. Area control. Four. Area control and expansion might actually end up leading into each other a bit. Deception. One, two, three, four. And unfairness. One. Okay. All right. So we've got a bunch of things. While there was a lot of interest in area control, I think I'm going to leave that off because we'll be revisiting that topic later in the semester. So you'll get a chance to like look at these. So I'm going to take these two out for now. I'm going to take out all of the one vote ones, since that will make it tricky. That leaves us with voting, trading, building, and deception. Of the people who aren't assigned, was there one that you're not interested in? Anyone who you're not interested in working in any of these?
I'm not particularly, I don't particularly like the trade.
You don't?
But nobody's saying you're not interested in all.
Oh, no. In one, two, three, or four.
Yeah,
if you're interested in one of these, I think we can make teams out of this. All right, so later on in class, when we start with prototyping, there's going to be time to actually talk with each other. What I'm going to actually suggest is all the people who are not on teams switch to the front row, and all the people who are not on team who have teams switch to the back row. Probably one corner will also have to be a team that already exists. Actually, let's do that now. So if you're not on a team, switch to the front row so that you can have a little discussion. And you might as well sit with your teams if you already have one, because we're going to talk about stuff to do together today.
Yeah.
All right. And for the people who aren't in teams, remember the goal is to make two teams out of this. Out of any combination of this, if you end up changing your game mechanic, that's fine. All I'm looking for is two teams out of the six people who aren't assigned yet.
Well, that would be nice if it ended up like getting a degree.
The number of names in there. Who hasn't signed in yet? Who hasn't signed in yet?
I have my name not on it.
Write your name in.
Yeah, I've registered, so that's confusing.
If you pre-registered?
Yeah, and I was there before. My name was on the list the first time. Now my name's not on the list.
Very weird. Something weird with Stella. I printed straight out of Stella. So write your name down at the bottom. You did awesome, and I'll check it out during the break and see whether we can fix that problem.
Okay.
All right. So how many of you have seen this presentation from me before in like any of the 15 times I gave it in the past year? Okay. All right. So about four people. This is a presentation that I give a lot. It's also something that ends up getting covered in one of our new classes this semester, CMS 301. This is probably going to be the last time I actually give this presentation in CMS 608 because it's kind of like a really basic skill, and we're going to be moving this into our intro classes in the future. But it's also the one skill that, if you learn nothing else from the rest of semester, but please still continue to come to class, please learn this, because this is the thing that this is the core skill that we're going to asking you to keep working and keep practicing and keep improving on all semester long. This is the thing that you're going to be doing all semester long. So first of all, that's kind of jumping the gun. Let me take a step back. What's a prototype? It's in the reading, but yeah.
It's like a basic thing you just toss together to illustrate a concept.
To illustrate a concept, yeah.
Thing that's supposed to do like one mechanic, and can be iterated to have more.
For a game, it could be something that just tests one mechanic or concept, and then you're gonna iterate on it. Sure.
Something you just put out there to get feedback.
Yeah, to just sort of like gauge how other people are going to respond to it.
In general, it's just an unfinished version of the game.
It is unfinished. It is not like your shipping product. At no point does it assume to be your shipping product.
I'd say it's a first version of anything that was specifically built just to test that thing, rather than to have a product.
Again, just to test an idea, right? To test whether something could work. And you said a first version, could be an early generation or something.
I was just
going to
say like a minimum usable product.
Something that you can actually use, right. not like a sketch of a game, you know, an actual game that you can actually, you know, play. Anything else? I thought I saw a few ahead back there. I think we're getting kind of a good sense of what a prototype is. You know, you've probably encountered prototyping in some other classes. You know, a lot of engineering classes have involved prototyping. You know, it is this unfinished thing. It is not meant to be an iteration of something that you're actually going to ship. Now, in this class, a lot of things that you're going to end up building are building towards a finished class assignment. This is the thing that you hand in that meets all of our criteria, that, you know, has all the rules, and if you put it in front of someone who's never seen your game before, they should be able to figure it out. However, the very first assignment, it's pretty much build a prototype. You're testing out one single mechanic. And the question that you should be asking yourself is, what are all the different things I can do with this one mechanic? And doing this like deep dive into this one big open question, and you've chosen these, and you're going to end up choosing that question for yourself. But it's an investigation, and prototyping is a tool to help you investigate something that is going to help you build your final game in the end. So think of assignment one as an exercise that's actually going to help you build assignments two and assignment three. Even though we are asking, you know, for things like rules that we can read, you know, but for the most part, this can be very sketchy, very unpolished. If we can play it, if we can use it, I think someone said minimum usable product to be able to see the ideas that you're working with. That's good enough. Do spell check your work. That would be nice. But the some of the reasons on why you want a prototype. Hold on. Where are my slide notes? Just 1 second. I have no slide notes. Okay. All right. So some of the reasons for why you want a prototype. We already talked about getting feedback, right? You know, being able to put it in front of people who may not necessarily have seen your game before. But maybe part of your target audience, you know, to be able to get their opinion. Put it in front of your instructors who may never have seen a version of your game before, or maybe have seen a game version, to be able to get their feedback. Or other designers or guests that we might be bringing in, you want to be able to put something in front of, you know, everyone who knows something about games to be able to get their critique, right? But the earlier and cheaper part is the important part. You want to be trying to get feedback as quickly as possible in your game development process. You want to the earlier you manage to get new information into whether your ideas are working out or even appealing, then the cheaper it is to make changes. So, for instance, you've got a great idea for one of your game mechanics, and it turns out that everyone else on the team absolutely hates it. Well, you'd rather find out about that on like the first day of meeting up with your team than say 2 weeks into the project, right? You want to be able to that would be very useful information to sort of say, okay, I can work with other ideas. Are you on the team?
Yes.
You are a team. Awesome. Okay. So I don't have to worry about getting you on the team. Cool. The other thing that you're trying to do with a prototype is to try a lot of different approaches to the same problem. So experiment with a lot of alternative solutions. One thing that often happens in design teams, professional design teams, amateur design team school, or outside, is that people like to talk their ideas out. They love to make sketches. They love to theorize about, you know, well, it worked in this game, so it should work in our game. I really like that, or I really hate that in this other game. You know, this offends me on some sort of primal way. You know, about game design, and I'm going to explain it to you verbally, you know, in about an hour or so. And that just wastes a lot of time, especially in class like this, when you have these very tight deadlines to be able to get something working. You don't really want to be spending a whole lot of time talking things out. You want to get actual answers as quickly as possible. And one thing nice about prototypes, especially on a multi-person team, that you can make multiple prototypes to just test a whole bunch of different ideas out. Is, you know, solution A better than solution B? Well, instead of like arguing about, well, theoretically solution A is better than solution B, why don't just prototype both of them and just play them? And you'll get an answer very, very quickly among your that all of your teammates can see. And it makes discussions actually more fruitful because you're working with evidence as opposed to working with just theoretical thoughts. Another thing about prototypes is that, again, prototypes are not your shipping product, which means you should always be willing to throw it away. The less time you spend making your prototype, the easier it is to just discard it. You know, worse it looks, the uglier and sketchier it is, the easier it is to abandon it. And you need to be able to abandon prototypes. You need to be able to say, this just isn't working, and I'm fine with that. The whole team is fine with that. We spent 30 minutes making this thing. You know, we can afford to lose those 30 minutes, which means you need to be making stuff really, really, really fast and really, really shoddily. You don't want to be spending a lot of time making a polished prototype. So here are the things, here are goals that I'm setting out for you when you're going into prototyping. Today we're actually going to start prototyping the games that you're going to eventually hand in for assignment one. I want you to find the fun. All of these game mechanics, the mechanics that other people already, that the teams have already chosen, and the mechanics that the teams will end up choosing, all of them have fun and unfun implementations. I can think of, you know, a whole bunch of ways to make building go really, you know, really, really at a really plodding pace. To make it, you know, so that you can never really get any progress and things like that. And, you know, you can come up with really, really nice implementations that are just going to engage everyone around the table and they're going to have a good time. Fun doesn't necessarily mean everyone's happy, you know. If it's like a game where deception, for instance, right, you know, it's like, you know, if you're playing around with that mechanic and you feel like you're just being an asshole to other people, but that's what the game's actually about. You are trying to be deceptive to other people, maybe not necessarily without them realizing it. But then that immerses you into your experience. That engages you. It sort of puts you in the persona of what the designers were trying to achieve. Then, you know, that's engaging. That's good. If it's something that puts people off from ever playing the game again, then you might want to reevaluate that. But there is some value on games that you're only going to play once. That, you know, I'm not going to be very dogmatic about that. What I want you to do throughout the prototyping process is figure out, of those game mechanics, what are the fun and engaging things that you can do. What are some of the less fun implementations. If you don't find anything that's not working, then I don't think you're looking hard enough. you need to be looking really hard and what you should be finding is a whole bunch of things that don't work and a few little gems that do. The other thing that I want you to do with the prototype is use the prototypes to communicate to the rest of your team about where your ideas are going. You know, as you work in your team, if you want other people on your team to understand the ideas that you have in your head, try making a prototype to communicate that. All right, this is this thing that I did last night. You know, I bring it into the team meeting together. Let's play this for like 5 minutes, and then you'll understand what I think is interesting about, you know, voting, for instance. And your team may have a completely different idea about what they had, about where they want the game to go. But this is a very effective communication tool. When you're actually designing games, especially for assignment two and assignment three, where you're trying to hit some sort of desired external aesthetic or the final assignment is going to be for a client's needs, then you are working on some sort of external spec, but then you also need to communicate within your own team on how you're interpreting that spec, that requirement, that request from an external party. In this class, it will be your instructors. If I say make a game that is going to get you to a certain aesthetic, which is assignment two, then how do you think the team should start even proceeding in that direction? Communicate that using your prototypes. It can be very, very difficult to get those ideas out otherwise. The third thing that I want you to do with your prototypes is to take it outside of your team. Today is going to be very easy because we have a room full of people who are hopefully eager to help each other out. And you're going to end up playing each other's prototypes by the end of class. That's only going to last for one class, because as of the end of today's class, all of you are going to know too much about each other's projects to actually be good testers in the future. So I want you to take it to people outside of class, your dorm mates, your friends and family, email them stuff if they're at home. Take it to La Verde's or the student center or something. Offer people free tacos or something to play your game for 5 minutes. That sort of thing. Let's see. It's very, very important to make sure that you're getting feedback from people who are not on your team. Of course, the instructors. It's not just going to be us. We're going to grab people from the game lab to come in here and play your games and give you feedback often. So occasionally, we'll just bring in new people who haven't seen your game before. But don't count on us on doing that. You should be doing that as part of the homework. That is the process of prototyping. Okay. So, before I go down that shopping list, any questions so far about what you're trying to achieve with prototyping? Okay. Again, assignment one is going to be a lot more about prototyping than making the full game. Investigating one single game mechanic is something that you're probably actually going to end up doing for both assignment two and assignment three, because it's like, hey, this is the way how I think we can fulfill the requirements of the assignment. And then you're going to investigate several different mechanics to get to building your final. So think of assignment one as the prototyping assignment. Let's talk about what we've got for you today. Things that we recommend for prototyping include large sheets of paper. Here are a couple of pre-printed maps. There's a hex grid on one side. There's a regular horizontal and vertical grid. Is there a word for this? Cartesian? Yeah. Square grid. Yeah, square grid. These are, I think, 2 centimeter squares, which is also the size of some of the wooden blocks that we've got. Yep. And I think the hexagons are also 2 centimeters if you take it from if you take them horizontally. So you can print these. These are all actually available in PDF on our class website, the Mark prototyping mat. There's a second version of these maps that has marks. It has just a bunch of lines in bold. It's exactly the same map, but it has a few things bold-faced. to sort of help you to sort of help figure out what a square in here actually looks like. You know, if you want to use a counting track or something like that. I actually like these better. I know Rick likes the other one better, so we put both up for you to download. Let's see. What else do you need? Dice. Here's a big box of dice. 6-sided dice, 12-sided dice. Has anyone ever used a 12-sided dice? Really? What's it good for?
D&D.
Huh? D&D does D12s?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I know they do the D20s a lot. Okay. 10-sided dice, 8-sided dice. If you want to buy dice for yourself, a tip is to get them from kindergarten suppliers rather than from gaming stores. Gaming stores will probably cost about 10 times as much. This box cost me about $12. The whole plus the box, you get a nice little case. let's see. Dice are good for randomizing, obviously. I do not suggest using dice to keep track of numbers. So, you know, say you've got a number that increments anywhere between 0 to 20. 0 to 19 or 1 to 20. Don't use a 20-sided die to keep track of that thing, because it's very easy to lose that stat just by a flick of your hand. Instead, just grab a piece of loose leaf paper or something and just write down that number if you need to keep track of stats. Don't use dice to keep track of stats. But, you know, dice are good for randomizing. They can be used sometimes as tokens that move around in a pinch. You can use dice to do things like one die is the tens and one die is the ones. So I'll roll 2 10-sided dice and then, you know, it's going to give me a number between 1 and 99. The 199? No, 00 and 99. Yeah. Let's see. Index cards. We've got white ones in here. We've got colored ones in here. They sell index cards that are a little bit closer to playing card size, but remember the rule of keeping things big. Big sheets of paper. I'll go into a little bit more detail of why you want that, but why you want to do that. But if you're making like a card game, I would actually suggest using index cards. They are a little bit harder to hold in your hand. It's difficult to like keep a whole bunch of index cards in your hand like a fan.
They're hard to shuffle too after a while.
Yeah, they're hard to shuffle as well. But for prototyping, not only are they cheap, and we talked a little bit about, you know, doing things cheaply and very disposable. They're also larger, which makes things easier for you to actually see when you're prototyping. And I'll get into some value of why you want to be, so a few more reasons why you want to be keeping things as big as possible. Post-it notes are not in here, they're in those boxes. Post-it glue and notepads, and by notepads I mean, you know, stuff like this, just to be able to, again, keep track of stats. We've got pencils and we've got markers and pens in there as well. Post-it glue, if you haven't seen this, I'm pretty sure one of the boxes, it just looks like a regular glue stick, but it's blue. I might only have some in my own room.
We've got about 6 or 7 in there.
Yeah. It basically takes any piece of paper and turns it into a post-it. It makes it into a sort of restickable piece. Not only is that useful for the brainstorming phase, where you can take, you know, index cards and then turn them into post-its and stick them up in a wall. They're really, really handy for prototyping, because you can lay things out, say, on a desk or on a sheet of paper, and it won't just go flying if somebody sneezes. You can sort of keep things in place. If you've ever done prototyping for, say, a user interface on a computer, a piece of computer software, it can also be really, really handy, because that means you can like cut out pieces of paper that are exactly the size of, say, your menu bar or your window or whatever. Just like use the glue stick, make them replaceable and sticky, and you can place them anywhere on another sheet of paper. Pencils, pens, markers, scissors, tape, that should be obvious why you want all of those things. Game bits. We've got, let's see, some of you saw some of these in last week's games. These are sort of stackable counters. We have the cubes. You can also use dice for game bits. You can also use pieces from other games. You don't necessarily have to restrict your ideas to what we give you. Those, I believe, are rubber animals.
Yep.
Yeah. Often end up being used in tactical combat games for some reason. I don't know why people always want pigs to fight chickens.
Because ducks hate pigs.
Ducks hate pigs, right. Ducks don't stand up. That's the problem. That is a problem with our sort of... We have a whole bunch of little rubberized animals, and they don't stand up very well. They tend to tip over. We also have a whole bunch of rubberized vehicles, and those tend to be a little bit more stable. So keep that in mind before you decide, oh, I have to use this chicken piece. Let's see. Kindergarten counters, you know, things that I use to teach kids how to count, make great... Great covers for your design. Oh, you mean like these, right? They have different colors on each side. So you can use them, you know, for currency in your game, for keeping track of points. Another way to keep track of a stance of a stat is just give people pieces that helps them keep count. Your phone camera is extremely useful in keeping an archive of your work. Of keeping track of your game in play, keeping track of who had what hand at any given time is very, very, really, really easy. And a lot of phones now have enough resolution that you can sort of reliably use them to keep a record of your work. Way easier than trying to slap everything on a photocopy machine. So I used to recommend using the photocopier, but nowadays I just take lots of shots with your phone camera while you are working. So you want to be keeping your prototypes rough. You want to be using hand-drawn materials, trying not to immediately go to opening up a Google Doc and creating a spreadsheet or anything like that. Start writing things down. Again, you want to make a bunch of cards, just start writing stuff down on your index cards. If you want to start making a map, just start using a marker and drawing it on the grid. You want to keep it sketchy and you want to keep it large. And you don't want to be using too many inks. Just choose one dark ink and run with that. The reason for this is because you don't want people to be giving you feedback on how your game looks. You know, if they do say something, wow, this looks like crap, that's fine. And just move on from there because that's not the feedback you were looking for in the first place. If you start using lots of different colors, they're going to start talking about your color scheme. Maybe this should be red, maybe this should be green. If you start making things, say, printed out from a laser printer or something like that, people are going to ask, you know, wow, is this final artwork? It looks not very good. Or if you take the trouble of using color pencils, for instance, to, you know, nicely render an image on your cards, you know, and people say, wow, this looks great, you know, then you hand drew that, but then now if you want to alter it, means you're going to have to go through all that effort again to draw a new picture. And that takes time. That takes more time than you need for this game. You want to keep things sketchy to sort of convey to your testers that this is a work in progress. If somebody sees something that actually looks very, very nice, they're going to think that you're close to final, and they're going to be a lot more hesitant in giving you drastic feedback, like things that are going to sort of require drastic changes. Whereas it looks like you've spent half an hour, maybe 15 minutes just sketching stuff on a bunch of cards, you'll get feedback from testers who says, like, you know, I just don't like any of this, you know, or like, maybe this is the one thing I like, but everything else is just crap. But that's the kind of feedback that you want to get at a prototyping phase. And keeping things sketchy can sort of encourage people to give you that kind of feedback. I definitely had lecturer notes, but they're not showing up on my screen, and so I'm a little bit... off right now. Notes. Ah, here we go. Okay. So the other thing that this is actually a 608 class from way back. The other thing that I want you to do is keep iterating over and over and over again. Yeah.
So you said like earlier on, we can't after this class we probably won't be able to like play test each other because we'll know too much about the games.
Mm-hmm.
Does that also mean like we should be changing our prototyping like outside of this class, like partners, like find a new group every time we revise the product?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The next time we do a prototype, a playtest in class, I'm going to specifically say if you try to find a game that you haven't, where you haven't talked to this, where you don't know anything about that prototype before you start playing the game, because that's where the feedback is going to be most useful. You don't want people to come in with preconceived notions based on previous prototypes, because your prototype may have changed completely from the last time that they saw it, but then they're going to come in thinking that your game is like some sort of natural progression from that previous idea. And that may restrict their ideas of what kind of strategies are used. If they already understood the rules when you say verbally explained it to them on day one, then they're not useful, they can't give you any useful feedback on how well your rules are written. Because they already know the rules, so when they read your poorly written rules, they can't tell you it's poorly written because they already understand it. That sort of thing. So yes, always try to find new testers. So the process of iteration is to just repeat this over and over again. You start with a question that you're trying to answer. The broad question of assignment one is what are all the different things that you can do with this mechanic. But say, I know someone suggested auctions on Monday. So like, what can you do with a Dutch auction? How does a Dutch auction actually work? You know, that sort of thing. You want a question that not only is a clear thing that you can actually test, but also you can set criteria for what will be a successful test or an unsuccessful test. The question might be very specific. Like, this game is too long. Can we get this to run under 20 minutes? Can we get this thing to run, under 15 minutes? Well, that's a very easily, that's a falsifiable question, right? If the gameplay actually took more than 15 minutes, then it was a fail experiment, and if it took less than 15 minutes, then it worked. And you want to be able to go into the process asking, what is the thing that we're trying to solve? Before you start thinking of potential solutions. How many of you have heard of axiomatic design? This comes from McE, I think. The theory behind axiomatic design is that you have a couple of for any potential solution to a problem, it needs to fit a certain set of criteria. So you have you come up with a bunch of axioms which you just take for true. Certain axioms that you might come up with a game would be this game can't take more than 5 minutes, or this mechanic can't take a player more than 10 seconds. Certain axiom could be something like we don't want a player to have more than 5 cards in their hand. These are things that aren't necessarily always the right answer, but you're going to sort of like set these criteria for yourself for a given test, and then you start thinking about all the possible solutions to get you there. And whatever solution solves, meets all of your criteria, all of your axioms, then that's a successful test. If not, then it's an unsuccessful test. So a question that in your game may be like, can a player execute this mechanic in more than one way? Or will a player execute a certain given mechanic in more than one way? We've given them 3 different ways to do it, but if they keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, then that will be an unsuccessful test. Okay, once you've got a question, you can start designing for that, right? Maybe the designing involves something very small, like I'm just going to tweak the numbers of rules that we've already written. It might be we've got to rewrite half of our rules, or we've got to throw out these rules, or maybe it's we're going to rearrange the order in which these rules are going to be executed. That's all design. The trick is to do it fast. The word rapid is there for a reason. If you're spending a lot of time discussing about what the right answer is, just start designing two prototypes or more prototypes to sort of test out all of the outcomes. Try not to anything that takes a long time to start to where you kind of get bogged down in discussion is actually wasting time for your team when you should be prototyping, because you're going to learn a lot of things about your game on the side besides the question that you're asking. If you have a discussion, you'll probably only, if you do stumble across the correct answer, you're only going to get the answer to that one question that you asked. So make more prototypes to answer your questions rather than try to talk them out. Let's see. Then you do a playtest, and there's a second part of my presentation which involves the playtesting phrase, but basically you grab a bunch of people who don't know how this game is going to play out. First, you'll probably end up playtesting within your own team just to make sure that everything makes sense. And then you take it out to somebody outside, maybe someone else in this classroom, to see how they respond to it. And then you look at the results of that playtest. Did it Did it address the problem? Did it give us any information towards the question we were asking? You know, maybe it wasn't conclusive, you need to do another playtest. Maybe it indicated that we were in the right direction, but that the changes that we made weren't drastic enough, or maybe were too drastic, and we can slim things down. That's when you make your revision, and then you repeat the whole process again. You can improve the quality of your question, be more specific. You might stick with the same question and just do a second version of design to it. You just want to be repeating this over and over again. The more times you get to do this, the more refined your prototype is, and the more refined your final games are going to be. This is the same process whether you're making a prototype or whether you're making a full-blown board game or card game or computer game. The more chances you get to iterate on something, the more refined it's going to be. You do want to keep changing. Here are a couple of tips that actually I will get back to this later after you've actually had a chance to prototype once. Those were like tips for how to like get out of a rut. So let me talk about this instead. Keep track of all of your rules. Write your rules. You can write your rules on cards, which makes them very easy to rearrange, to discard, to say, all right, we're not playing with this rule right now, but then maybe you can reintroduce it later. So you can use your index cards for that. You can rearrange them to rearrange how they end up getting played. If you change your rule, update your card. If it's something like, I'm going to just change a number, you can just do it right on the card. If you're actually changing the way how a rule works, write it out on a new card. Take photos with your cameras, and try to simplify your rules to the point where you end up with like a minimum set in order to make a certain prototype playable. If you have too many rules operating at once, it can be sometimes very, very, really, really confusing to figure out where everything is going wrong. It's a lot easier to add new rules than to take them out, which is why I place the emphasis on taking stuff out. Because if I remind you to take it out, maybe you will do it once in a while. So that's going to be the process of prototyping. We're going to start handing out these materials. People who haven't figured out your teams yet should be having a discussion about what mechanics you guys want to work on and how you're going to split up your teams. People who know what mechanics you're working on, or maybe are trying to decide between two mechanics, you can start prototyping. You can start splitting your team into two and working on two separate prototypes, for instance. And the goal is to have something that somebody outside your team can actually play by the end of class, more accurately by 3 o'clock, because we're going to go into playtesting at 3 o'clock. Around 2:30, I'll go back to this slide to give you some ideas on how else you can change your designs to be able to help you get closer to your design goals. But right now, this is what I want you to do. So we're going to start handing out some of this material. I'd be okay with a team moving up there.
Anyone have any dice? Oh, yeah. Okay.